For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. My friend and colleague Rick Munn is with me today. Rick is the host of Locked and Loaded right here on TNT, which you can find each weekday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. London time, 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. New York time, and 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Brisbane time. Rick, welcome back. I feel like it's been a long time.
It's been too long, and I must say, and I say this with all honesty, it's nice to hear your voice again, Jesse. I've missed our little chats on air since the jiggery-pokery happened with the schedules. My show got moved back, and it became antisocial for you to be on there every Monday. But here we are again, thank God, on Perspective. It's all good.
Yes, sir. It's good to hear your voice, too. Although I've been hearing it in the videos you frequently put out on Telegram, so I haven't missed it too much, but I've missed it nonetheless.
I get you.
So let's start with something you've been focusing on for some months now, if not longer, and that is the migrant crisis in the UK.
Yep.
And looking at GBN News last night, an outlet with which I'm sure you're familiar, GBN News reported Channel migrant crisis sees busiest day of the year, referring to this past Sunday, as 442 people enter the UK illegally. So we are not even through with the first month of the year yet, and already, according to this report, over 500 people have come from France and entered the UK illegally. This is just a small portion of what the UK has seen over the past year. According to this report, approximately, well, just under 50,000 or so people entered the UK illegally last year. That's a huge number. That's comparable to a small city in a lot of places.
Yep.
What are you seeing where you are on the ground in Northern Ireland, in the Belfast area in particular?
Well, if I can just start off by referencing that GB News article, and to put a little bit of context onto this as well, they're already seeing record-breaking numbers of people crossing the channel. And bearing in mind, the channel, the English channel, is arguably one of the most dangerous and highly used straits of water in the world. These people are crossing over primarily from France in dinghies. At least those are the ones that are crossing by sea. We don't know who's coming through Eurotunnel. We don't know who's being smuggled through in containers. These are just numbers that we're seeing crossing the channel. It's winter time here. It's extremely dangerous conditions. And despite that, you would think being a deterrent for a dinghy crossing from France to England in the winter in the English Channel in perilous conditions, still the people are flooding across from France, from Dover to Calais, or from Calais to Dover, or whatever route that they're taking to land in England. So the weather's not deterring them, the danger's not deterring them, and we're already seeing the spike in numbers to kick us off into 2023. And also, the French Navy, despite the fact that these are illegal crossings, the French Navy will escort the people from France to where their territorial waters end in the English Channel to make sure that they're okay. They won't prevent them from coming. They'll simply escort them. And if they get into danger, they will intervene and maybe take them onto their Navy ships. When they reach a certain point, an organization called Border Force, which is funded by the British taxpayer, will then effectively then escort them back across English waters to the UK, and the RNLI will also assist, if needs be, in actually ferrying them to shore. And that's a charity that's paid for by charitable donations by people in the UK. to my knowledge, it's not a taxi service. It's not a water taxi service. It's to help people that are genuinely at risk or in peril, but they're being used as a ferrying service as well to get the people to the UK. So that fleshes that little article out a little bit. I hope you don't mind me adding that in. It's just we need to put as much context into this as possible so people can understand the gravity of this situation, that nothing is deterring these people from coming, let alone the fact that they're being escorted here by the French Navy, the British Navy, the Border Force people, and necessarily sometimes the RNLI before they get to the UK. But that's the UK on the whole. You're asking me about Ireland, Belfast. It hasn't hit us yet the way it's hit the Republic of Ireland or the south of Ireland, especially in and around Dublin and other areas such as Killarney, a place called Drogheda. People are really actively taking to the streets now, Jesse. And in what I can see is worldwide, the first real on the street protests in numbers against the open doors policy that our governments have in Ireland with regards to people just flooding the country, coming and claiming asylum, claiming refugee status, claiming climate asylum status. They're worried about the weather where they're coming from. And this is a powder keg, my friend, that is building and building. The pressure is building and building. And in Dublin at the moment, it's starting to escalate a lot of violence within the migrant centres themselves. The men are fighting amongst themselves. The people are protesting in the streets outside. There's counter protests from people saying, no, we welcome everybody. You have your Antifa types that are counter protesting the protesters. It's getting very messy over here, and I can't see it getting resolved peacefully, to be quite frank with you. It's too much pressure and it needs to be released.
Mm-hmm. This article, this GBN article, reads that the most recent boats that came, as you said, were shadowed by French naval vessels who have a policy of not intervening to intercept the inflatables once they get into the water.
Yep.
And once they pass a certain point, a territorial mark in the waters, the border force comes. And according to this article, the border force vessel Volunteer, that's the name of the vessel, took the first batch of around 40 people to the processing center in Dover, arriving just after 1 a.m. So the border force and other entities, I believe the military is involved as well sometimes, and they pick these people up or escort them to processing centers such as the one in Dover. And what happens from there, to the best of your knowledge? Do they get processed and then let go into the UK?
Well, what happens is originally there were a lot of citizen journalists that were actively waiting for these landings to happen on the shores and videoing and trying to literally do a head count as people came up the beaches. I kid you not. So like you and I, for example, would go to New Jersey or down to wherever it is your coast, Coney Island. And as the dinghies were coming in, we would literally sit there with a pen and a piece of paper and do a head count. Okay, there's 42 in that one. There's 63 in that one. There's 18 in that one. There's none on Tuesday. That's how people were getting an estimate of the amount of people that were coming into the country, because the government weren't releasing accurate, up-to-date, trustworthy figures. So whenever people started to do that more and they started to shine a light on this, they then sectioned off the processing centers. They tried to stop people from reporting on what was going on there. But then again, people were flooding in, they were being processed in inverted commas, and then they were being bused to accommodation. And the accommodation could have been hotels, usually, or guest houses that the British government had secured the usage of through companies such as Serco. So they would basically come in and say to a hotelier in a certain area, listen, we will guarantee you residency for the next 12 months. We will cover any indemnity for any damage that's done to your property. We will pay you a premium on whatever it is you would normally take to rent out a room. The condition is you close down to paying customers like you and I, for example, if we wanted to go there and have a holiday or a weekend break or whatever it happens to be. And also, most of the time, the staff were all sacked. So they would put their own staff in. There would usually be a skeleton crew, maybe of cleaners or people that were knowledgeable about the running of the hotel. And everybody else would be laid off, Jesse. And this has been going on in great numbers in the UK and also in Ireland. Approximately 1 in 4 hotel rooms on the whole island of Ireland are now held for people that are coming across into Dublin. So think about that. 25% of every guest house, hotel, B&B in Ireland is held potentially for migrants. Okay, so that means that paying customers can't come in there. The government are slow to pay the hotels in some cases. They're not paying them at all in other cases, or landlords, and it's causing untold havoc for communities. Businesses dropping off. People don't want to come into an area if the vast majority of people living in the hotels are unknown elements, okay, and they are unknown elements. It's killing businesses, it's killing town centers. So when they arrive, they're processed in inverted commas. Sometimes they don't have any identification, in which case they should be deported immediately, but they're not doing that in Ireland. They're just giving them accommodation. They're telling them they're X, Y, and Z. The government are taking them at face value, and then they're being released into communities, which is highly dangerous, let's be honest about it. And it doesn't matter where they're from, by the way. I'm not a xenophobe. My next door neighbors are from Swaziland. My best friends are Africa, Ugandan and Kenyan and Tanzanian. I'm not a racist person. I've been over there so many times in the last 15 years. I spent more time with black people than white people. Nothing, I've not got a problem with anybody of any skin color, but I do have a problem with people flooding into a country when we can't verify that they are who they say they are, and we don't know what their intentions are. That's just common sense and self-preservation. It's not xenophobia.
Yes, I agree. And looking at this article, there are 3 photos taken from this past Sunday, and they look like they're taken from afar. So that's in line with what you said about these areas being walled off from observers. Yep. And in each of these pictures, in the 3 of them, all I see are working age males. So males between the ages of, let's say, 18 and 40, maybe 50. Young men, for the most part. Yeah. I don't see any women at all. And that, following your reporting on this and others reporting on this, seems to be or has been the trend since this crisis began. And I'm not sure when it exactly began, if you can put a definite timestamp on when it began, but in any case, it's been primarily, and to my observation, 99% young men or young males, again, adult males, who are arriving in the UK and then being let go, as you said. And it sounds like there's no follow-up after their process. They're just let into the country and that's it. That's the end of any type of interaction they have with authorities.
Yeah, the situation with the demographics, okay, you're right. Even a casual observation will see that the vast majority of people that are coming across the channel or coming into Dublin are young males between 18 and, say, 40 years of age. That's a fact. You have to ask yourself a question. If they're fleeing from persecution or they're fleeing from climate, terror, whatever reason they have, or they're seeking asylum for an oppressive regime, you have to ask yourself, are the regime only targeting the young men? What about their mothers that are still in the country? What about their daughters or their wives or their sisters or their grandmothers that are still in the country? How come it's just young men, 18 to 40 odd years of age, coming in? And this is one of the big problems, because how can you say that the people are fleeing and being granted asylum are just mostly one sex, male, and of a certain age. Where are the old women? Where are the infirm? Where are the children? Where are the wives? Have these men left their families behind in a dangerous area to come to Ireland to seek asylum? What does that say about those men? And even if you think about the excuse that was being used for people fleeing from Ukraine and in some parts of Ukraine that weren't necessarily, they weren't necessarily being imperiled. There was a time whereby if you were of a certain age in Ukraine, you were expected to stay behind and fight. But most of these men ended up in Ireland and were happy to be received by the Taoiseach or the Prime Minister of Ireland, who at the time last March was Micheál Martin. It's now a thug called Leo Varadkar. They're both cut from the same cloth, but they have the same policy. It's an open doors. We welcome people in, and the people of Ireland in particular, Jesse, are being told to brace themselves for another 80,000 arrivals this year on top of the 70,000 plus that arrived last year. And on a per capita basis, don't forget Ireland's population is only around about 6 million in total. We have nowhere to put them. There are no places for them to go. And the government are even posting up little warning signs on their website to say, if you're thinking of coming here as a refugee or an asylum seeker, you may not actually be housed in a house like we've told you will be. Most of them are being herded into renovated office blocks, disused office blocks, community town halls in dormitory type conditions, like an American prison where you see there's overcrowding. So they use the gymnasium or the sports hall. They put bunk beds in there and they zone them off. They're just powder kegs of tension waiting to go off. All young, all men together in a closed area. They get claustrophobic. They get bored. It ends in violence. And that's actually been happening this week in Ireland. Actually, there's a few reports are coming through I could discuss with you that have happened in centres, refugee centres this week. Mass rioting. And yeah, they're kicking off because It's prison type conditions for them too. I don't envy those people either. They're being sold a pup when they're told they're coming here to the land of milk and honey, and when they get here, they realize they're coming into hellish, cramped, overcrowded, claustrophobic conditions. And the people are protesting at their window, saying, "We don't want you to be here either." So tensions, my friend, tensions, and tensions again everywhere.
The last thing I'll point out from this GB News article is the fact that at the end of this month, the Home Office will take control of channel migrant operations from the military under a new small boats command. The new command will see an extra 700 Border Force officers working out of Kent and will also bring together the National Crime Agency and the military in a more coordinated approach to tackling the crisis. Do you think that's going to have any effect, or is this just shuffling the deck chairs around on the Titanic, as the metaphor goes?
More talk. Even the fact that Rishi Sunak came out a week or two ago and his address towards this particular problem that we're discussing, he called it the small boat problem. He didn't call it a mass migrant problem. He didn't call it a security risk. He called it a small boat issue. He wouldn't even give it the correct name. Suella Braverman, who's the Home Secretary, she's been promising the earth. Before her, her predecessor was Priti Patel, and as far back as 2019, she was making the same type of promises that the government are rolling out now. We need to deal with this issue. This issue must be tackled. We must stop the flow of people in. We must reduce it, and we must eliminate it altogether. These were things that Priti Patel was saying back in 2019, that by 2021, there would be nobody crossing the channel at all. And of course, that's when we had record-breaking numbers, and they're being broken again in 2022. They'll probably be broken again in 2023. And as the saying goes, talk is cheap. Actions speak louder than words. And all we've had from the Conservative government on this issue and all we've had from the Irish government on this issue are words and no action. So they're hollow words, in my opinion, Jesse. And I'll believe it when I see it. When I see people being deported, when I see the borders being effectively policed, when I see Border Force doing their job, and they're actually named Border Farce here in the UK. They call them Border Farce because it's a farcical, useless taxpayer money squandering operation. And again, they simply escort people back. They assist this problem. They assist the problem. They don't prevent it, and they don't surely don't police it.
Right. When I heard or read about Rishi Sunak's statement on this, I laughed mockingly because it was so clear that he was just saying what he was told to say by whoever pulls his puppet strings, and that was it. And it was clear to me that he has no serious intention of doing anything about the crisis, but that's to be expected from a puppet like him and all of the puppets that surround him. But nonetheless, it's more and more a festering problem for the people of the UK. And you just mentioned some specific incidents where the tension is ratcheting up, violence is happening. So can you talk about some of those specific incidents, what this is looking like for people on the ground, both people who live in certain areas and the migrants who are ending up there?
Yeah, there's one incident in particular happened just yesterday. Okay, there's a large refugee center in a place called City West in Ireland, okay, in Dublin. And basically, there's around about between 800 to 1,000 men currently in there at this point in time. So because they have no accommodation, no houses to put people into anymore, and the hotels and the best bed and breakfasts are completely booked out, they're talking about putting modular accommodation together, literally like a shipping container type units that can be used for people to go into. They're taking over office blocks. They're using large community halls, trying to zone them off with, you know, little partitions here and there to try and make them homely, but they're inadequate. They're not fit for purpose to house large numbers of men. So I'm actually looking at footage here at the minute, and when the show's over, I'll actually send you the link through to this. You can see it for yourself. It's about, I'm looking at 800 to 1,000 men in a large communal area, trashing the place, attacking each other. There's groups of these men attacking each other. There's no police presence. There's no security there whatsoever. And I found out subsequently that when the Garda, which is the Irish police force, when they were actually called to that building, they were simply, the injured were removed. There were no arrests made. There were no arrests made here, and the place has been completely trashed. There was an incident that happened a week or two ago. There was a mass stabbing in another migrant center. The police were called, the ambulance were called, people were treated for injuries, and the men were simply shipped to other places within Ireland. They ended up in a place called Laois from the accommodation that they were staying in. They weren't deported, they weren't arrested, they were rehoused again, and it was written off due to tension and culture shock, okay? So it's happening more and more. The violence, believe it or not, Jesse, the violence isn't happening between the Irish people and the people that are coming into the country and staying in these hotels. Most of the violence is actually happening in the refugee centres amongst the people that are being put in, because you have different ethnic groups in there, don't forget, coming from different places. And when somebody finds out somebody's from another country that maybe they're at war with in their own country, or they come from a certain ethnic group within their country, it gets violent. They're bored, they're wound up, they're agitated. It is culture shock coming into Ireland, especially if you've been used to a Middle Eastern climate. You're coming into the cold Irish winter. There's people standing outside your window waving Irish flags, rightly so, and saying, not at the people inside, at the government, this is wrong, this is out of order, this is inhumane. Well, you know, you're going to be angry, man, and it's going to kick off, and it's just happening more frequently now. And this is the latest incident in particular, and it happened yesterday in City West in Ireland. And the fallout for that is still ongoing now. We don't know how this has actually been resolved. So that's just one example of many.
Mm-hmm. So to me, and I'm willing to bet for you, it's clear that there's an agenda at play here. Mm-hmm. I think we would be naive to assert that this is somehow organic. Maybe some of it is. Some people are caught up in the flow of migrants organically and are actually fleeing whatever they might have justification for fleeing. But on the whole, this is an agenda, and everything is being done to keep the flow constant, to keep it overwhelming. And those who are pursuing this agenda know full well, I argue, what it will lead to, what we're seeing on the ground now, what you just described, including the shuttering of businesses, the economic destruction it's causing in localities. I'm asking you to speculate here, I realize, but who do you think, either on a person level or on an entity level, might be behind this agenda, might be pushing this agenda?
Well, I'll answer your question, but the TNT presenter hat that I'm currently wearing at the minute, I'm looking at the time here. If you're due to take a break, I don't know what way it is with this show. I could be a couple of minutes giving an answer here. If you're due to throw to a break at the 30-minute mark, do you want to do that now?
And yeah, we can do that and come back.
If you get me, so I'm not so we can keep the flow going. It's just I've always got one eye on the clock here. And before I start unleashing truth bombs on that answer, I think it's going to take me more than a minute to give it to you. So yeah, you call it, my friend, you call it.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's throw it to a quick break. And then when we come back, Rick and I will pick up on the migrant crisis in the UK and who is behind what is very obviously an agenda. So hang tight, and I'll be right back with Rick Munn here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Bill Gates, man, he's pivoted hard. He's pushing now for fake meat. You see, real meat, bad, very bad. Bad for the environment. Cow farts, don't you know? Growing soy, that's okay. Turning it into fake meat, oh yeah. At the same time, they're talking about lab-grown fake meat. Oh, and that's just the interim solution, okay? The medium-range solution is to actually grow meat in the lab. They want to use biotechnology to grow beef, chicken, pork, etc. If that wasn't scary enough, what they're also talking about simultaneously, but over on another parallel track, you got to connect the dots yourself. They're talking about injecting food animals with mRNA vaccines, not for the animal, but for the vaccines to be incorporated into the meat. So whether you want to be vaxxed or not, when you eat it, you're jabbed.
The Timothy Shea Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When the forgotten poor are suffering and in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. Heroes of mercy, like these.
Every human being has the right to be treated as human, to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the look in the patient's eyes or the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
We bring hope and healing to one person, but that person belongs to a family, and that family belongs to a community.
Together, these heroes of mercy and friends like you bring hope and healing to those who desperately need it.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org today.
Info at your beck and call.
The stunning developments.
Stay tuned for updates.
Just tell your smart device to play
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. I'm Jesse Zerwell, and I am speaking with my good friend and TNT colleague, host of Locked and Loaded right here on TNT, Rick Munn. Rick, before the break, I asked you who you think is pushing this migrant crisis agenda, because let's call a spade a spade. This is an agenda that's being pursued here. It's very obvious. So, and I have some insight, I suppose you could say, I'd like to contribute to answering that question, but I'd like to get your take on it first.
Well, you know, first of all, let me make it clear. I do believe there are legitimate cases happening, legitimate cases crossing into America at the moment, legitimate cases coming into Ireland, legitimate cases coming into various parts of Europe. There are people that are genuinely fleeing from death and persecution from other places. Sure. And if we can help those people out and accommodate those people, then I believe that we should be doing that. However, there's also a lot of chancers. We call them chancers here in Ireland. That's basically people that are chancing their luck. They're chancing their arm. They're trying to come in and get what they can because they see this picture in their eyes from where they're sitting, that if I can just make it to France, or if I can make it to Ireland, or if I can make it to the US, life will be better. I'll get free this and free that and free the other. So we can't say that the people themselves are behind this. They're simply following the money, or they're following a perceived dream or a perceived better quality of life. The people in the receiving countries certainly aren't behind it because it's causing a lot of division. Some people think this is a wonderful thing that that's happening in the world, this mass movement of people around from place to place. Other people are aghast. They're saying, well, it's not going to work. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the money. We don't have this, that, or the other. So I'm ruling out who's not responsible for it. At the very least, okay, at the very least, at governmental level, I always lay the blame initially at government's feet, because the Irish government could stop this tomorrow. The British government could stop this tomorrow. The Biden administration could stop this tomorrow if they really were sincere and genuine about it. But instead, we just have the rhetoric. We have the political speak. It's not good. We need to address it, but still it happens. So who's responsible? At the least, it's the governments of our respective countries, but they're also operating in lockstep together on this particular issue that we're discussing here tonight. And even that article that you kicked off the program with, you can see the French government working with the British government to facilitate illegal migration. It's an illegal process. These people are crossing the channel illegally, but they're being helped along by the French Navy, and they're being picked up by Border Force, and if necessary, the Royal Navy and or the RNLI, then put into hotels funded by the British taxpayer and administered by Serco, who have been given contracts by the British government. So just amongst, just between France and England, you have these two governments working together. The same with Ukraine. Whenever the people were flowing out of Ukraine and into Poland and into Germany and through France and making their way across Western Europe, the governments were working together to facilitate them. Okay, so there's a concerted, effort on behalf of all the governments, not to prevent this or to stop this dead in its tracks, but to facilitate it and to let it happen. And then if you want to go a little bit higher up the chain, they're all World Economic Forum affiliates. Okay, so they're all operating. Usually the Taoiseach for Ireland is WEF. The French president is WEF. Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, they're WEF. Biden has WEF links. They're all WEF linked. Albanese, you name it. They're all linked in somehow with the World Economic Forum. And again, obviously there's people controlling those, that group of people, banking dynasties and one thing and another. So, you know, at the very least, I would say it's a coordinated effort, a lockstep effort at governmental level to enable this to happen, because at governmental level, they could stop this from happening tomorrow if they wanted to, but the desire is simply not there, and that's manifested in a lack of action. Plenty of words, but no action. So I would say the governments initially and collectively are responsible for this, but it does go higher up the tree. But at the very least, I blame the governments every time.
Yes, yes. The governments are taking orders. They are enforcing policy that's been developed above them and distributed down to them. So if we think of the agenda here in terms of a policy and who is developing this policy, I think it's very appropriate to look at the World Economic Forum. If you look at the program for the annual meeting that took place last week, you can find a lot of panels, such as the one I'm looking at right now, which happened on Thursday of last week, titled Widening Europe's Horizons. And the description reads, how can the new European political community help the European Union and its neighbors strengthen the continent's security landscape amid wider geopolitical shifts? And this session was developed in collaboration with Politico, the news outlet. So there you see the penetration, to use Schwab's word, of these policymakers into corporate media. But this panel gets more interesting when you look at the speakers. So you have the editor-in-chief of Politico's Europe branch. You have Roberta Metsola, who is president of the European Parliament. You have Alexander Vucic, who is president of Serbia. You have Leo Varadkar, who's the you have to pronounce that for me.
I'll Taoiseach. Help you. Taoiseach, the Taoiseach or the prime minister.
Yes, you have the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar. And then you have, last but not least, Edi Rama, prime minister of Albania, of all places. Mm-hmm. So this was a panel that was held, again, last Thursday. And you have Varadkar, and you have the prime minister of a country where many of these migrants are coming from, Albania. And they're on a panel called Widening Europe's Horizons, which, if you read between the lines there, it's, to me, it's suggesting that the UK, despite Brexit, is still a part of Europe and needs to be brought back in to the European orbit, or the horizons of Europe need to be widened to take in the UK again. And yep. One way to do this, to break down nation states and further, one way to do this, to break down nation states and further a global governance type entity, is to create a crisis like the migrant crisis, where nationality, distinct nationalities are erased, the lines between them are erased, and it becomes discouraged even to want to hold on to your distinct nationality, because it's not woke to do so, or it's racist to do so, or you're prejudiced against people who are fleeing hardships, when, as you said earlier, that's not the case. You're looking at tens of thousands, way more than tens of thousands, of people flooding into your country, and they're largely unvetted, and there's no explanation, no clear explanation for why this is happening. And it's leading to events like the one you described in City West. And it's leading to things like I've seen on Telegram, which I can't verify, but the people putting out the content seem to be genuine and seem to be genuinely worried. Mm-hmm. I saw a video a few days ago of one of these men who'd arrived in a mall stalking little girls who were shopping in a store. I believe this was in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken.
Saw that one. Yeah, and the mother, I think, confronted the guy. And I mean, he said, it's just a picture for me. He was photographing her daughter. I don't know what age the child was. The woman was chasing this man through the store. The security were doing nothing at all about it. Everybody's afraid of offending people and afraid of treading on people's toes and being accused of racism. And listen, I don't care where you're from. If I catch you in a supermarket taking photographs of my daughter, I don't care if you're black, white, green, orange, Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, atheist, or witch doctor, you're going to get your head caved in. That's all there is to it. And unfortunately, the problem is that everybody's tippy-toeing around, Jesse, and everybody's afraid of offending people because of the woke culture that we have in at the minute, that's what's causing this to breed and fester. And these people also know that. There's a lot of people out there that are very deviant that are flooding our borders, and they know that they can get away literally with abuse, and they know they can get away with this behavior because of the culture of the countries in which they're coming to. therein, my friend, lies the problem. There's too much tippy-toeing around being done and not enough hard repercussions for people to take actions like the one that you're talking about there, photographing other people's children blatantly in a supermarket with no fear of repercussion whatsoever. That's the problem. No fear of repercussion.
Yes.
Sorry for that rant, by the way. I just had to get that off my chest.
No, I appreciate it because, as I've said on your program before, and in many conversations you and I have had, what gets me most angry about this, about the global injection program with regard to COVID-19 in inverted commas, is the targeting of children, right down to children who are just out of their mother's womb. And to me, there's nothing worse than that, the targeting of children in these ways, whether we're talking about with toxic lethal injections or if we're talking about them being subject to the predations of strangers, adult strangers who are taking pictures of them for, come on, we know why that's happening. This guy isn't taking a picture because he's never seen a little girl before. He's taking a picture for reasons we can speculate on, but I think our speculations would be pretty close to accurate.
Yeah.
So that upsets me as well. So I get where you're coming from. And just the last thing I'll point out about this World Economic Forum panel, and there are a number like this if you go through their program pages. It's tedious to do so, but it's worthwhile if you want to see where the policy is coming from, or at least one of the centers of policy making. The last thing I'll point out is that the panel is called Widening Europe's Horizons, but if you look at the URL for it, it's Redrawing Europe's Borders. So not widening Europe's horizons, but redrawing Europe's borders, which suggests a lot more than widening Europe's horizons, right? It suggests what I mentioned earlier about breaking down nation states, about global governance, and maybe that was a mistake on their part. It should have been widening Europe's horizons instead of redrawing Europe's borders. I don't know, but the tell is there. And the World Economic Forum, this globalist entity, is certainly, in my mind, one center where this policy is coming from. So I think we need to look at this in terms of globalist policy that's being forced upon people, particularly in the UK right now, but also in the US as well. There's a problem, as you mentioned, at the southern border. And I'm not a statist by any means, but what this is doing, it clearly is breaking down nation state identities, breaking down nationality, making people ashamed to identify with their nationality. And it's playing upon all sorts of things. It's playing upon, as you said, people who have legitimate reasons to flee elsewhere. It's playing upon the woke culture that's been literally injected into cultures all over the world. So you're not allowed to criticize this stuff because it's racist or it's xenophobic or whatever you want to call it. And we can see the convergence of these policies, I think, very clearly in what's happening with the migrant crisis. And that, among many other reasons, is is one, we need to pay close attention to what's happening, because I don't think this is going to stop in the UK. I don't think the problem in the US is going to stop anytime soon. And this is probably going to become more global in scale than it already is.
Agree. It's not good. And one last thing, by the way, you also mentioned about the EU and the UK and trying to sort of drag us back in with certain policies. When I think it was at the time, Priti Patel and Boris Johnson were PM and Home Secretary, respectively, last year. They introduced a scheme that anybody crossing over into England, if done so illegally, would be deported to Rwanda for processing and to be sent back to their own country, okay? So there was a whole furore about that. It was a human rights abuse. People were fleeing to England and they were being stuck on a plane and sent to Rwanda, which is geographically pretty much slap bang in the middle of Africa on the east coast along the equator, which is a long way off the UK, for an indefinite period of time to be processed and maybe given another life there. That was deemed to be a human rights abuse, and I understand that the European Court of Human Rights did intervene in that, and that program was stalled and scrapped altogether because it was deemed to be a human rights abuse, which, you know, if somebody's fleeing from death, Jesse, you can't really be picky about where you end up. I would say your own safety is paramount. So if you're fleeing from death in New Jersey, I think your primary concern would be to stay alive. If I said, listen, Jesse, you're going to have to go to Peru, unfortunately, but we'll look after you there. You know, it's either Peru or die in New Jersey. You would think you would take the life option, but that's not necessarily the case. The European Court of Human Rights, the ECHR, intervened, and that scheme was stopped before it ever got started. And it made no sense either, because why the hell would you fly people down south of the equator when they're coming from London? Just stop them from entering the country in the first place. Prevention is better than cure. Actions speak louder than words, and round and round it goes. You know, all this can be avoided very quickly, my friend. Just close the damn borders and don't let anybody in, period, unless they can prove that they're under threat of death. And we know who they are, and we know their background, and we know they're not mass murderers or pedophiles. It's not difficult, is it? It's not rocket science, but they're not doing it.
Right. And I would also add to the breaking down of nation states, the breaking down of economies as well, in service of remaking the international monetary and financial system. I believe this is part of it too, because if we look at the economic state of just the UK and just the US, they are in dire straits, to say the least. And this is only exacerbating those conditions, and it's intentionally doing so to create a further controlled demolition of the economies, because the goal at the end of all of this, as I see it, is to create or remake the international monetary and financial system along the lines of CBDC, tied into digital identity and digital passports, one world governance. And this is a huge tool in the globalist tool chest in furtherance of that, because not only does it break down nation states, it breaks down economies as well. And there are probably other aspects that we could get into that service the global governance agenda too. But in the time we have left, I'd like to turn to something that is connected, I would say, especially since we just talked about the incident that occurred in the mall targeting the young girls. And that is this huge increase we're seeing, just like the huge increase in the influx of migrants, this huge increase in the grooming and sexualization of children, whether we're talking about drag queen story hours, so-called, or we're talking about libraries all of a sudden having new sections devoted to the LGBTQ plus community or culture, however you'd like to term it, trans identity, gender identity, and sexual identity. But this is being targeted at children. And the Conservative Woman, the outlet which is based in the UK, conservativewoman.co.uk, published a piece yesterday about mothers, and I believe a father is involved. It's a group of five parents who are fighting sex indoctrination of three-year-olds in Cardiff in particular. Yeah. And they're trying to stop what is clearly exploitation and sexualization of their children through the education agenda, through the school teaching agenda. And just to read here quickly, a Welsh court has recently agreed to demands by lawyers acting for Cardiff's Labour government to force four working class mothers and a single father to pay massive legal bills. The Courageous Five lost a judicial review case last month over Wales's policy of teaching children as young as three about sex and gender identity. An order issued by the Administrative Court Office for Wales just before Christmas said the mothers must find £50,000 in costs. And again, these are working class mothers and a single father. This gets more and more out of hand by the day. In New Jersey here, there was supposed to be a drag queen story hour at a church-affiliated children's center this coming Saturday. In the article advertising it, there's an editor's note that it's been canceled. Well, too bad, but I think that's for the best. But this is happening everywhere, and it's clearly targeting children, grooming them, trying to sexualize them. And I'd just like to get your take on this, what you're seeing from your side of the proverbial pond.
Well, it's horrific in the UK and Ireland. The drag queen story hours, we have those also. We have the gender theory being taught to children in schools, the reading materials that are being put into schools that teachers are encouraging children to read are so disgusting and so pornographic that when parents take these books that are meant for children of between the ages of 4 and 11 to public meetings to read the contents out, they're being asked not to read them out loud because they're disgusting and graphic. But these are adults reading them to each other, but they're allowed to have children read them within the schools themselves. Okay, so this is happening in Ireland at the minute. It's happening in Scotland. A child in Scotland can change gender in school and be referred to by their new name, the one that they could choose. And the school do not have to inform the parents that this is going on. This is part of a law that's trying to be passed across in Scotland and rolled out to the rest of the UK. So if you have a child who goes to school and you want to apply sunscreen to the child, you need parental consent. If you want to give the child a paracetamol, you need parental consent. But if the child wants to change gender and be referred to a certain pronouns and change their name and say, I'm a boy, I used to be a girl in school, now the school doesn't have to inform the parents of this. It is deviancy and it is wickedness at the highest level. And let me say this as we roll this up, Jesse. We talked about immigration. We've talked about various issues. You and I, right through the course of the last 12 months here on TNT Radio, everything really breaks down to the destruction of society. Okay, so The mass immigration is causing a breakdown of society. It's causing stress on infrastructure. It's causing stress for the people coming into the country. It's causing stress for the people that are already in the country. It's breeding fear. It's breeding uncertainty. It's causing anxiety and stress. This is just another element that's being introduced to children. The parents now need to worry about what their kids are being exposed to for up to 40 hours per week in a classroom, and also knowing that the teacher doesn't have to let them know if their children are wanting to transition or being known as a different name or different pronouns. It causes no end of stress. And lastly, my take on this is the last final taboo that needs to be broken down for society to completely implode and collapse upon itself is the sexualization of children and pedophilia. It needs to be accepted and it needs to be normalized before society has nothing left anymore. It's just complete debauchery. And I think that's where we're leading now, where pedophiles are now being branded as minor attracted people. We're being told that they are born that way and they have these urges and we need to respect that. We're seeing seeing this with the sexualization of children in schools from, as you say, 3 years of age and upwards, Jesse. I can't even remember what I was doing at three. I certainly wasn't thinking about my gender. I certainly wasn't thinking about transitioning. And I certainly wasn't wanting to know about biological parts of my body that I had no business knowing about until I was much older. So leave the children alone. But I think it's the last taboo that will be gone and broken down that they need to break down is the sexualization and acceptance of sexualization of children and pedophilia ultimately. And it's crazy as it sounds and as ludicrous and as evil as it sounds. That's the way we're heading, my friend. And it's done incrementally. They call it the totalitarian tiptoe or the incremental move towards these foul practices. That's how it's done. You introduce the concept, you try it in certain places, you roll it out further, and then you push the boundaries further and further. And I think, my friend, that that's where they're going. And it's disgusting. And sadly, if we ever do get to that stage, I don't think the world will be worth living in anymore. It deserves to go up in a ball of smoke or be hit by an asteroid or whatever happens to it. It will be like hell on earth.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just add quickly as we wrap up in the last minute here that yes, the breakdown of society, also the breakdown of family and the ushering in of transhumanism, confusing identities of people when they're young, makes it much easier when they're a bit older to get them to accept the idea of implanting things in themselves, because you're not a man or a woman anymore. You're a machine now. So put this in your body, and then we know what kind of totalitarianism that is intended to lead to. We have to leave it there, but Rick, thank you so much for spending part of your evening with me.
You're welcome.
Hope we can talk again very soon, and stay well. And as you always say, stay sane, my friends.
Thank you, Jesse. Take care.